I'm sure you would think that, but
Spike scan initiated. I'm picking up a podcast arriving. Wait. Designation: Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host, BLBL All Souls Podcast. I'm joined by Adam Camilleri.
Howdy everybody.
Tanya Gates and Red Powell.
What's up?
Hello.
How you doing, everyone? This weekend, if I get this episode out in time, I'm gonna be hosting the finals, which is an invite event for the U.S. Open Series, Warhammer 40,000 here in the U.S. Please tune in on Warhammer TV on Twitch to see the coverage. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be a different format. I think it's going to be exciting for people to maybe tune into and see something a little bit different.
And they got some really interesting things lined up for this one. So please tune in and check it out. It's going to be pretty spicy. Some revelations set to be had, apparently.
Hey, before we get too deep into this episode, I want to take a pause, do something we don't normally do, and say happy anniversary to Anthony Boxall. I know I'm a little bit late.
Happy anniversary.
But due to recording schedules, you're hearing it now. Awesome. Thanks for listening.
So what was the deal with that? Is that a listener that had messaged in?
Well, it was a listener's loved one that messaged in and let us know this event was happening. And I wanted to call attention to it because I thought it was really cool that they reached out.
Fantastic. Thank you. Thank you for reaching out. I think it's a lovely thing to do.
You know, one of the keep the conversation lines open on Twitter and Instagram and actually through the webpage. I really love hearing this while we hear some of the lists we talk about coming from stuff like that. And then, you know, I thought this was cool to go ahead and mention. So I wanted to do it. So I hope y'all had a great day.
Sweet.
Yeah.
I think it's really sweet because, like, at least in my experience with two people who play Warhammer in the same house, like, what do you get your Warhammer spouse? They usually just buy themselves exactly what they want.
We're going to talk about that later on in the show. We're going to talk about an anti-gift guide. Just a couple of things that probably maybe not the best gifts as we get into the holiday season. But before we get to that, that'll probably be after the break. I want to talk about this stuff we've seen up on the Warhammer community site with the Custodes and Sisters of Silence.
Oh, man.
I'm very excited.
Well, a couple of new models have been previewed. And what is he, the Swordmaster?
Yes. Yeah. The essentially the Lieutenant of the Custodes.
We've seen him, I guess, for a while now, but I don't know. I'm not getting tired of looking at the model.
He does have a pretty cool pose, like how he's charging into it.
He's a pretty guy. He's a very, very nice model. Nice and simple, heroic stanced, aggressive. I love it.
I look at an army like this and I'm like, man, Retributor armor is so easy to use. That's what I think.
Well, yeah.
It is good. It's really good.
Talented can.
20-30 models in a paint in a metallic paint I don't mind spreading around. Looking better and better. It's all adding up.
Like, legitimately, you could get most of the base coating done for Custodes in an afternoon with Retributor and then take your wash or contrast of choice and make it whatever tinge you like. It's going to be fun for you.
I think you got with a reddish. Sorry, Daniel. I should shut up and let the actual painter talk.
I was just going to say, or you could just completely play on hard mode and paint your model a beautiful burnt red with about a bazillion edge highlights on it. Good to go.
For the love of the hobby.
Or you could go on expert hard mode and just be like, oh, I think non-metallic metal is fun and decide to ruin your own life.
God, I remember when that not to
sidetrack. I've seen how long it takes.
I remember when that non-metal metallic first hit the scene. It looks like sorcery.
It does.
Like magic.
Yeah. But gun on the people that have the patience and the ability to pull it off. I have not been able to. Well, anyway, I know we're getting sidetracked on the hobbies. But the Custodes, you know, we saw like battle stances and stuff, almost, you know, seemingly similar to things that progress Power from Pain, stances, tides, doctrines, you know, stuff that advances through the game.
I've been playing Custodes as a small, like, detachment in my guard for a while now. And it was kind of nice that they were super simple to play. So I'm kind of interested to see if you think that they're still going to be simple to play with all of this extra stuff added on, or if you think they're going to be complicated.
I guess this is more like actually like canticles too. So each of your command phases, so long as one is available, you must select one kata stance to become active for your army. Each time you do so, units from your army with this ability benefit from it until the start of your next command phase. When selecting a kata stance to become active, the following rules apply. You cannot select a kata stance more than once. You must select a primary kata stance first, and you cannot select a tertiary kata stance until you have selected a secondary kata stance. Once you select a stance of a different martial kata, you cannot select a stance of a previous martial kata. I know it's a little wordy, but I'm setting it up.
Yeah, yeah. And I actually feel like there has to be another blurb to explain this, because it goes on to say some stuff about secondary kata and tertiary katas, and I'm not quite sure how those interact. Like, do you just line up the one you want to be active that turn, and you get your choice of the first part or the second part?
Well,
and then again for the...
Let me explain. So think of it as an a la carte menu of devastation. You pick three martial katas at the start of the battle, each containing two stances, and perform those katas in order.
It's like so protocols, Necron protocols, to a certain extent.
That's also written in the article.
Well, apologies. I've been well out of
it. I'm just messing with you. It was just a perfect setup.
Yeah. I am jet lagged. I spent yesterday not being able to like actually see properly. My eyes wouldn't focus for like half the day. For those of you who don't know, I've made the trek from Australia to the United States, where I'm going to be staying for the next couple of months. And I am currently so dead to the world for like a random amount of hours. I have no control over my ability to focus. But yeah, it sounds a lot like protocols, doesn't it? But with only having, did they say that there's going to be more than three that you can choose from? Because right now they previewed three, and those three, they do look quite good.
Well, it says you pick three. I don't know if that means or insinuates that there are more, but I would imagine otherwise it would just say, take them, and you have to.
Yeah, exactly. Here are the three you will take.
What are y'all thinking about that? I mean, as Red, you play with protocols.
I mean, I think it's I like the system, and I do like the, you know, it's not just a copy and paste of doctrines for Space Marines. It's also not just a copy and paste for Necrons. I get kind of the way in which they're trying to deliver it, and I like that it does have this flow when you think of katas and kind of the martial direction of it. And if you've read any of the material, like the First Heretic, right, from Horus Heresy, which does a really good job of highlighting some things with the custodes, I think it plays well into it. I'm interested. I really want to read it a little more. I mean, I got what was in the Warhammer community article, but I just like to see the depth of it and what really goes along with, you know, primaries, secondaries, and tertiaries, and how those positions can be best used. I think it's very interesting in how they're going to do it. But I can see where some people up front looking at it might be slightly confused. But I think that this goes into a whole part with the game where we've seen this process. Yeah, I think AdMech is a really good example of that. You know, AdMech in their command phase, there is a process in the command phase there for them and how they go about determining doctrines and canticles and whatever else, all the things they have going on, chants, so on and so forth, you know, rubbing butter into the machines to get it to turn on better.
Excellent analogy, especially with this whole menu metaphor they get carried throughout this article.
Exactly. So the custodes are going to have that, and that's okay. We get it. We that's where they're going. It's okay. I want to read what is actually behind it.
And the units too, like seeing how some of this stuff applies to certain units, like the Callistus says, you know, stance two is each time this unit makes a normal move or advances in your movement phase and your following shooting phase, it counts as having remained stationary. What does that actually mean, you know, to these, like, what is effective on in which units?
All their guns are rapid fire or assault ready. They don't really have heavy guns outside, say, the Sagittarum, the Forge World. Mm-hmm. I think they've got heavy they've got heavy bolters esque on their stuff. So yeah, I really don't see what the impact is. Maybe there's more to be revealed there. Get away out of the context.
Jet bikes, because the jet bikes can auto 6-inch advance, and then if you put the then you could just shoot stuff, right? So you're gonna get in the rapid fire with the hurricane bolters to pretty much anything if you can like 20-inch advance and then still shoot.
It's true.
That didn't sound too bad.
Now that I know this is quite close to protocols, maybe I wish that had a little bit more unique. Like,
yeah. So the next thing is that mentioned in the article is the Dakatari, or Dakatari. I'm just gonna go with it.
As an orc player, I love it.
Stance one is each time an enemy unit piles in or consolidates, if it starts its move within engagement range of this unit, subtract 2 inches from the distance models in the enemy unit can move for that pile-in or consolidation move. I think that's pretty good. Well, we know the game is won and lost when you're moving models around. So anything that influences that, cutting the distance that most units can move by 2/3 seems pretty strong.
Yes. Also, I think because in some of your units, the model counts are quite small. If they can't get around you to block you off or whatever, it gives you more room to move around, if that makes sense. Like, they can't encircle you as easily.
Is there some thought that maybe some models, if especially they were strung out, wouldn't be able to get into range to bring attacks to bear on you?
Yeah.
It says, when fighting hordes of infantry, this is a tasty choice.
This article's got a lot here, I guess. I mean, I think this is the type of stuff that I love, because we get to get full-on theory about, how we'd be using the units and how they're going to start manifesting a different type of play style on the battlefield.
Can we just once again reiterate that I love the way that this article is written?
The whole dinner.
It's incredible.
Yeah, some had some fun with this one.
Yeah.
Check it out. Especially if you're a Custodes player, you probably already have checked it out. I don't necessarily think them a one-dimensional army right now, although I think we've seen people shift toward that with the kind of the domination of Telamons.
Yeah, so Telamons have this really special place in the game where they're one of the units that feels truly durable in all situations. There are several units out there that are phenomenally good in X, Y, Z circumstance. One, Drakari being right now, with one of the reasons that the Chonky Coven's Drakari build is so good right now is because it has durability into everything. And Telamons are on that level as well. If not Telamons, are the greatest extreme of that. But the only exception is you can't have a whole army of Telamons. You can only have three, and then those three can only be in three places at a time. Whereas, you can have a unit of three. Kronos or Talos, etc. Yeah, Telamons, depending on how many CP you've got, can just be immortal. Like, they can just literally be unkillable in a game, in a matchup. And so that's always been really exciting.
But I get what you're saying, why people are taking them, but it's kind of moved them into now a lot of your pieces and a lot of your strategies wrapped up into those.
Exactly right.
Those, which they look awesome, so more power to them.
Yeah, I really would love to see. And one of the good things about Custodes armies right now, they are quite diverse outside the Telamon builds. Like, so you get some people who take one Telamon, two Telamons, and then they'll still have, a couple units Custodes guards. They'll have a unit of Terminators, possibly. They'll have some Venatari. They'll have maybe a unit of Bikes. And it's really quite a nicely fleshed out list outside of the truly skewed triple Telamon builds. Like, you'll have some Gladys dreads. You'll have some Achilles, the sword and board.
We saw some of them this past weekend, or maybe 2 weeks ago, really being kind of a tee up or almost a distraction unit, which is interesting that those magnificent warriors of the Imperium use as a distraction, but they were being used to pretty good effect.
Yeah, they're really quite good. They're one of my favorite things to conceptualize using with a guard army to really give guard what they don't have, as in resilience and counterpunch. But yeah, they do that for a swathe of different factions. So you could even consider doing that with sisters if you wanted to lose some of your mono bonuses. But Custodes are in a really interesting place, and I feel like I'm super excited to see what a codex brings to them.
Do y'all think that the inclusion of these stances and may put a shift more towards troops? So even if the Telamon still is that immovable object, that people will want more of the foot troops in the army?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's really the hope for me. The hope for me is that their infantry become really powerful, because it's really been a real big contrast for Custodes, especially in the MSU meta, that their vehicles have been the mode of play. As Drakari and the MSU armies and the speed related armies got better, the fact that you just didn't have enough models to play the primary meant you didn't bother. You just took the stuff that lived and killed. If it lived and killed, that means you actually got to play the game. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you took a bunch of small units of infantry, you ended up just getting kind of surrounded and outscored. So hopefully with the rebalancing of some of the things in the game, we might see a more truly fleshed out build come this codex. And I'm really excited to see some of the infantry just get amazing. One of my favorite models in the game is the Terminus. God, my brain's not working. Not yep, the equivalents.
The Alaris? Is it?
The Alaris Terminators. I love those models. I
probably another I in there. Tenya, is it Alarius? Oh, Alariusus?
No, it is Alaris. Their rules, the amount of stratagem support they've got. I don't think any unit in the game has as much stratagem support as Alaris Terminators do. They have like 4 stratagems just for them and a bunch of other special rules just for them. And they're really, really quite cool.
I remember when we did the review of the most recent updates for them, and they just seem to get better and better.
Yeah. So here's the one that I want them to really see them make good, because there's one unit that's been in that book that has never been really much value, and that's Wardens. And Wardens are sick. Take a Custodes Guard, give it a big chunky axe, and make him wear a kilt, and you have a Warden. It's amazing. Yeah. I'd love to see them be like a new powerhouse unit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's jump if we can with some our remaining time over to the Sisters of Silence. Mm.
Man, I tell you what. So since 7th edition, I tried to make them work. I wanted them to be their own army. It didn't really work out too well. I mean, there's still only 3 options for them, really, right? There's the prosecutors that have the bolt guns, and then there's, I believe, the witch seekers and the vigilators. One of those has the flamers, and one of those has the great swords. And so they had those 3 units, which are essentially the same unit, but just change weapons. And then it used to be in 7th edition that you had rhinos that you could put them in, and the rhinos would also radiate their psychic blankness.
Yeah, that was interesting. Awesome. That was an interesting time period in the game.
It was very interesting. I mean, you had all sorts of other crazy stuff going on too, but because I couldn't make it work, I ended up just stapling them into my Gladius formation. So that was fun, just having this extra detachment of, you know, psychic negativity. It is a lot of fun. But now I was really excited. You know, so 8th edition, the Talents of the Emperor deal rolled out, and they were like an elite choice. I think you could make a Vanguard detachment, but it was kind of rough. But now I really appreciate that this recent article from Warhammer Community allows us to bring them on. We're not sure of the exact terms and conditions under which it's allowed, but a Sisters of Silence HQ exists outside of even the character, which you can now actually take the character from the like duo by herself, use her as an HQ, but then you have the prosecutors or troop choices, and then they have like elite and a fast choice, and so you can actually make
the vigilators is elite, the witch seekers are the fast attack.
There you go. And so to be able to lay those out, that's pretty awesome, because now you can have a detachment. You could play Sisters of Silence as its own thing. I just don't know what other benefits or detractions they get for doing that. But it seems really good. It seems really cool.
Yeah, there's in this cadre tactics thing here. While a friendly Anathema's Psychana core unit is within 6 inches of this model, each time a model in that unit makes an attack, re-roll the wound roll of 1. That's not close combat attack. That's attack. That might add up.
Could, yeah.
Yeah, and this is on the Knights and Centura, which is that new model I was talking about.
I think that Relic Blade looks pretty cool.
It's not bad for a Strength 3 model. I mean, doubling its strength, AP minus 4, 2 damage, right? It's not bad.
He hits on 2s.
And hitting on 2s, yeah.
Not bad at all.
Nah, and then, you know, it's what impact would these Null Psykers do on the game right now? I mean, with Thousand Suns, I'll be honest, Thousand Suns haven't hit the scene as hard as I thought they were going to hit.
But maybe it slows down Grey Knights.
For sure it impacted Grey Knights. And T-Suns are just kind of still bubbling away. There's some people putting up some very strong results with them, but they haven't caught fire. You're absolutely right, Paul. It hasn't really taken off and solidified into like a portion of the meta just plays and does well with T-Suns, like people do with the same with Grey Knights. There's just a portion of people who just take Grey Knights and do well. It seems like it needs a lot more thinking to get the results with T-Suns rather than some of the more linear armies. And even Grey Knights. Grey Knights are super complex, but it's the list construction.
Like Dread Knight 5 times and and then spread.
That's
the rest.
Very true. But you can click Scarab Occult once and they're always going to be good.
Or you can get 3 Chaos Spawn units.
That's right. I think you should do both. 10 Scarab Occult, 3 Chaos Spawn. Let's just go.
That's not a bad list, I don't think.
No, not at all.
But I guess where I was going with that is anything that marginalizes Grey Knights is going to, or should marginalize, probably a bad word. Anything that curtails the Grey Knight menace, if there is a menace, is going to also impact Thousand Suns. Is that going to further push them to the rail?
Yeah, well, it can't make them worse. It can't make them better. But
yeah.
Realistically, there's no way that this doesn't hurt in some way. And especially one of the interesting interesting things is we'll have to have a look and see what kind of mono bonuses that sisters get. Like, does a mono Sisters of Silence get the carters? Do they get to do that, or is it just the custodians only? Or is there another mono faction bonus for exclusivity to sisters?
Yeah, we don't. Yeah, it's just the Talons of the Emperor, the thing that you're running. Like, if you're running either one of these forces combined or not, are you still just always a Talon? We don't know. We don't know that yet.
Well, if they don't, if there's nothing, if you don't lose anything by allying a mono Sisters of Silence attachment, they just become a beautiful plug-in for anybody whose meta is concerned about psychers.
Yeah.
Like, you want to remember we joked a couple of weeks ago, I think Paul and I joked in another podcast that we do, the Thursday show, we joked about how there was like over two-thirds of a field of an event was only T-Suns and Grey Knights. It was over in Scandinavia, and we said, like, if you could take seven Kalexuses, you would consider it. Well, I guess you can take the equivalent of possibly seven Kalexus if that's a thing.
And these models paint up the same way with your Cannon Retributor armor.
Yeah, or you do what is it, Ironbreaker? You just do Ironbreaker spray or Lead Belcher if you want to do the silver instead of the gold.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There's tons of alternate color schemes in the book. And then of course you know, going your own way like Tanya has. But I'd say these, if you even going in the traditional sense, you could get them on the table with relative ease. And I like armies like that, like Necrons. I know we talk about Necrons as being a kind of a starter friendly army, but you can put as much artistry as you want into these models. They certainly have sculpts that sustain it. But I do kind of like how one might be able to look at this army or an army like this and think, I could probably get that on the table.
Yeah, exactly right. Be interesting to see what their points come out there's a few different iterations of points to go through. They got Chapter Approved to come out, and then of course their own codex, but you got to imagine those two will marry up pretty close. Because right now, like, how many models to a 2000 point army, Tanya? Like 20?
Well, in my 500 point attachment, it's 7 models.
Fair. So what's that time? Yeah, times 4?
Like,
yeah. So,
28.
28 models.
But I don't have any like Telemons or anything like that in there. So
fair.
So back down
probably
to 7
a lot
models.
Less.
So yeah, this is a really good starter army. It's very, the paint schemes are very starter friendly. You can get it relatively cheap by, you know, some other conventional army standards. And it's, as it sits right now, it's a little bit hard to learn at the moment because of the density of rules you can apply to one model in the current army. And I'm not saying that's because then you've got you pick your shield host. And then past that, you've got just so many stratagems. And see, people think, custodians, you know, they've got only like 4 or 5 pages when you total all the supplements and all that stuff together. Uh-huh. But they are probably the best 4 or 5 pages of anybody that anybody has when you put them all together.
Could, like, even my one little detachment, I could easily spend like 4 or 5 CP in the first, just on custodes, not on anything with guard. Like, if you're not tangle footing grenade, like every turn, I don't know what you're doing with your life.
Mm-hmm. There's so much good stuff to do every turn with SCP. Like, they have apart from not having double activations, and it almost seems like they were built because double activations might have been too much for them. Like, fire twice, though, custodians would be so obnoxious. But they've got some double shoot. Like, you know, they can double shoot with things like Venetarians and there's some of their infantry options. But if you were to just look at how many good options they have the most complete stratagem package or tool set of just about anybody in like the modern game. They can do pretty much everything bar like fight twice.
I kind of like that there's a few stratagems that they have that like allow you to activate them in your opponent's turn.
Yes, they
like,
have the
you can shoot in your opponent's shooting phase. You can, you know, like there's like different things you can do. I find that really interesting.
I love those sequence things. It's just they're just seemingly so powerful. Probably because there's a little bit of disruption element.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in addition to the raw power or whatever it is they're doing.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Oh man, it's so expensive, but I just one time want to do swooping dive, but it's 3 CP.
Swooping dive is the funnest thing ever.
Yeah.
So cool.
Is that the one where you, like, how's that, where you come down?
No, so that's when your bikers, specifically your bikers, charge in your opponent's charge phase.
And no matter what, you get to fight first.
It supersedes all other fight first abilities. And so you charge them when they think they're safe in their turn, and then you kill them before they get to do anything. It's when you can pull it off, it is a coup de grace. It is a thing of beauty. But it's also a massive gotcha, so you kind of got to tell people about it, at least at the start of the game. At least at the start of the game, you know.
That's a good point. Is that because that's something your army does? Like, do you? How do you reveal that?
And you take bikes because they can do stuff like that. So obviously, like, obviously it's a reason to have them, and therefore it's one of their modus operandi to be able to use this tool. But at the same time, like, there is a good discussion though, Paul. Like, what is a gotcha and what is just, where is the line there?
Because I know we've talked about it before on previous episodes. It's one of those to where it's like, I don't feel like I'm obligated to walk you through everything that my army does. But I do feel obligated, I should say everything that I might do in every situation. Not everything, might, you know, not that's, but I do feel obligated to answer your questions when you ask them.
Mm. So you might just want to, at the start of the game, be like, you know, how familiar are you with Custodes? I can do some pretty spicy stuff with these guys. If you'd like me to go through any of it, just ask at any time and then see what they say.
Yeah. That's difficult to explain, you know, like, yo, this has a really powerful out of sequence thing that I'm hoping you don't remember on turn three, and I get to do it because this is why I took this unit.
Well, it's also kind of unfair at some level to put that burden on a Custodes player who has so many things that possibly could be explained. Like, I could literally sit somebody across from me at the start of a game and go on for 10, 15, 20 minutes. And everybody knows me, especially with how I talk and how much I talk. I could waste 20 minutes of my clock.
A thick just blanket, like,
explaining all this stuff. And it would be worse. It would be worse than just saying, ask me the relevant stuff when you think you need to know. But chances are the stuff I start with, you will not remember by the end because there's so much to explain.
I think I'd remember this gets to charge in your turn.
Yeah, exactly. You'd be like, I remember that. I remember Tanglefoot. I remember Unleash the Lions. And yeah, we're good.
Actually, maybe not like turn four. I'm like, dang, got charged again. It happened last turn too, or last round.
as a newer player that is in coaching, that pregame talk, I swear we must have spent like 3 or 4 sessions on what it looks like, how to do it, how to like word your questions right to avoid people who are angle shooting and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I think that I do agree that I don't think that all that pressure should be on your opponent because there's a lot of things. I think for me, I feel like you have to know what your list can do. And you also need to know what kind of things would really hurt your list and then ask questions regarding that, if that makes sense.
Can anything in your army charge me on my turn? I'm going to ask every one of my opponents that.
But you could say something like, do you have any stratagems that allow you to do anything out of sequence?
Any out of sequence movement or any extra movement. What I actually normally ask is there anything that allows you to, pull off, a greater than normal charge or an extra consolidate or something like that.
I usually go through have you got anything that can turn off OBSEC or turn on OBSEC for you? Do you have anything that heroic intervenes? Do you have anything that it allows you to interrupt? And then it's like, do you have double activations? Do you have, you know, out of sequence activations? Do you have AuSpec scans? Do you have better charges from reserve?
Do you know probably that fetid blow drones can heroically intervene?
Yes. Do you know the Muffin Man?
Oh, I found out.
The one that I always ask is, because I have these custodies in my list now, the one that I always ask is, do you have any way of negating my invulnerable save? Because that's a huge thing in my list, because I'm relying on it really heavily as this like really tough little detachment that can actually hold objectives. So, yeah. I think that is on you as a player to sort of understand what is going to mess up your game plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and ask the relevant questions. This goes back to one of my other kind of tirades in the past about how with the nature of the game now, either nature of releases, the density of the books, the complexity of the stratagem system and how it is. And I don't mean that's not a bad thing. It's just, there's a lot of stuff, a lot of options to do during the game. The burn rate of CP makes, you know, certain things, they may never come up in a game. Certain things may come up in the game 5 times, you know, whatever. The opponent will rarely know everything that's in your rules. And so that's why, you know, if there's an FAQ or a new book release that everyone has access to, then fire away, because the people that want to be informed are going to find ways to get informed, or they're going to have a series of questions to ask if they've been in the game for the things that are most important. That was a bit of a tangent.
We all kind of went off on a little tangent there.
Yeah, but I do. I think
Red's the only one who didn't chime in.
You got to get in there and ask the questions you think are important to your game plan, and then play the game the best you can. So,
well, this is what, you know, Adam, you asked me about last time, right? The questions
is a big piece, and it doesn't just have to be, you know, questions on army specific, but I think that that's again going into it with a plan, key thing. Adam, you know, welcome to America now. Here's your weekly Eisenhower quote. Eisenhower said that plans are useless, but planning is invaluable.
That's a good one.
And so, yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, that's the guy that, you know, critics may say took too long to win World War II, but he still won it. And so with that, understanding the value of being what's your process for going into it, for everything that you just said, Paul, like what is the process that a player goes into it? What's your mindset and how do you make a plan? Your plan's only going to survive as good as is up to the point where the other person does something that you didn't expect. And so a lot of that goes into, you know, understanding what they're capable of, what their options are, and what their likely actions are. Like, what's the most effective for them to do? Are they likely to do that? Those kinds of things. And then understanding what you can do and how you can get into that. And then that takes us into a whole new, whole other aspect of, we start talking about decision cycles and, you know, the rate at which, you know, so StarCraft and other games and MOBAs and whatever, you know, you talk about actions, you know, per click or whatever, you know, how you go about what you're able to do at what rate. And there's some players that have the experience base and the understanding of the rule set that they can foresee certain amounts of actions, right? We're not on a chessboard where you're just, okay, this square to this square, this piece to this piece, those kinds of things. It's a little more nuanced than that because of just 16 plus different factions, all of these different rules. Now you start adding in katas and by turn processes and phases and things like that. And if you don't see these things coming, then you don't even know to ask those right questions to even make the plan to get you there. And that just, it's not supposed to be, don't let it be daunting to everyone out there listening. Don't let it prevent you from it. The reality is you got to get out there and play. There's only so much that we can do listening about it or hearing about it. You've got to quote another American president here, you got to step into the arena and you've got to actually play. You got to actually
Fill them today.
Man, I'm on a roll.
Yeah, agreed.
You got any Teddy Roosevelt quotes? He's my favorite.
That actually stepping into the arena is Teddy Roosevelt. You're welcome.
There you go. I thought that was Churchill. Churchill said something similar.
I'm sure you would think that, but no, it was Teddy Roosevelt. He said it. He, in fact, went as far as to say it to the French. So that's where he actually made that speech, was in France.
You're a brute.
You need some ointment for that burn.
Dude, I know. We can't get through an episode without shade from Red.
I'm sorry.
It's all right. It's a gimmick now.
I was quiet for a while. You guys
saving it up.
Yeah, you woke me up.
I really like that we could even have this discussion about this stuff, because I'm kind of looking forward to the tricks that the custodes are going to be able to pull off. And then I was thinking earlier that I don't even mind, you know, that they can do this kind of explosive types of things, even if you invest in them, because that kind of ties back to what they do in the stories as well.
Yeah, one of my favorite Horus Heresy novels is Master of Mankind, and
one of my
Custodes in Master of Mankind. Oh, it's phenomenal. The whole back in Red's of good books. It's lovely to be there. Like the way the Custodes are portrayed, their sense of individuality, but still being part of a whole, the way they work together as individuals, so to say, is really, really unique. And it's amazingly thematic as well. I think that might be my favorite Horus Heresy book. I'm just trying to figure out if I like any more. Because I do love First Heresy as well.
That is a good one. It's better than it. I mean, I knew it was going to be great with the author and the subject matter, but it took some turns that I did not expect.
Unremembered Empire is just first. Yeah. Never mind. I was first. Master of Mankind second. That's just my order.
With the Custodes, I just finished Warhawk, and it's amazing. Mm. It is. I know you've probably seen people say that it's great online, and it is. There's some scenes in there, again, twists and turns I didn't expect. But one thing I noticed is like there's mentioned this big battle, and I think they kind of maybe mentioned some Custodes died, but they don't even like to call attention to it in the book, apparently. You know?
They really don't. I have very little sense of how the Custodes, how many Custodes left, or what their fighting strength is as the start of the Siege of Terror begins. It's almost like they've dodged telling you.
Yeah, I think it's the way that I came across that passage in the book, I almost think that it was an intentionally, like specifically intentionally not telling you.
Hopefully that means there's more to come, because they're the omission. Like, they're the great omission, because as soon as they were written to be like 10,000 absolute super soldiers, like the equivalent of two or three Astartes each, you're like, then how does the heresy actually be prosecuted without the custodians just going bang at Horus and just wiping out all of them? And so it's been handled really well in the story, just really, really, really well. Mm-hmm. And the whole, well, I won't spoil Mars for Mankind, but there's a whole storyline for the custodians and it's phenomenal.
It's kind of I was looking through some old art the other day and how the custodians really were just like in leather pants and a cape. That's all they wore. No shirt.
And like a helmet. Anime character or something.
These are the custodians. They were just in leather pants,
right? Yeah, the older ones.
Yeah.
That's where those joke models have come from, borrowing from a show where they're like, you know, these statuesque figures. Yeah, those are some silly old school drawings of them, like with no shirts on.
And it's wonderful that they were the guardians of the Emperor. And
so they would have been like He-Man inspired back in the day. Yeah,
it very much was.
This is before He had been before He-Man.
Do you think before He-Man?
I guess maybe not. I forget how old I am.
Yeah, He-Man's pretty old. He-Man's pretty old.
Yeah.
So, can I like just talk about why I'm so excited about the Sisters of Silence?
Yeah,
of course.
As a woman in this hobby, a lot of people think, well, why don't you play Sisters of Battle, Tanya? And to them I say, because I don't like them. I don't like all the...
Oh, you make a great point.
the religious stuff sort of associated with them just doesn't speak to me. I'm actually like... Because of like my background, it actually is kind of like aversive to me. So for me, the Sisters of Silence are like the most bad women in the entire like Warhammer 40K lore. And I just have always wanted to play them. And I'm just so excited that now they're going to have hopefully rules that are going to make them a little bit more effective on the table.
There's some story, and I'm probably getting some of the details wrong, but there's like a monument, like a, you know, a 400 foot tall statue of a Sisters of Silence that battled a bloodthirster, if I remember it, to keep the, to close the gate in the bottom of the palace.
Amazing.
I hope I didn't spoil any of that. I think that's a story in a codex or a white dwarf or something. I don't think it's in the, I don't know where I'm getting this information from right now, but I'm like 99% sure it happened.
I fell in love with the Sisters of Silence. There's a short story in that one horror anthology. Is it horror anthology?
Yep.
Like
yep.
Maledictus or something like that. And I absolutely fell in love with them in that story. And they were only in it for like 5 pages or something. So, I'm so stoked. They are sitting here on my paint table awaiting the paint treatment.
Are you going to do them in the same scheme as your custodian? Which check you out on Instagram, the War Mistress, if people have not done that already.
I'm gonna do something similar, so it'll be the same colors but just slightly different.
All right. Yeah. Well, let's take a break.
I just did some quick googling for you. Take a break. He-Man was out in 83 and the original Rogue Trader was out in 87.
Right, there you go. Could be so inspired.
Only 4 years between.
Like a blink of an eye. I thought you were going to tell us where that Sister of Silence and Bloodthirster story came from.
No idea.
Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. I'll tell you about this painting odyssey I've been on with the Death Guard Terminators, and then we'll do a little bit of an anti-gift guide. We'll see you in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games, Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
And we are back. Please check out our sponsors to get some things other than what we're going to talk about here. And by the way, look, we're getting in the holiday season and everybody celebrates differently. No pressure to get gifts and stuff, but some people celebrate that way. And I thought it might be neat to kind of look and explore it from the other side of, we're all gamers and where, well, if you're anything like me, you're kind of impulsive by nature. And so if there's something that you think you want, typically just try to get it in advance of a single day or whatever. And so I kind of thought we'd talk about that, about how, you know, as a, for instance, I guess everyone listening is probably pretty savvy about knowing what your buddy or significant other or whatever are into and what they already have. But stuff like a codex for their favorite army, they probably don't need because they probably already have it if they're playing the army. You know, so I wanted to talk about that, maybe things to avoid if you are celebrating in a gift-giving way this holiday season.
My first one is avoid buying somebody the starter to a new army unless they've specifically flagged the absolute hell of it that they wanted.
Like a battle force or something like that, or
Yeah. I know of people who've been bought, and this is sometimes it's by partners who, you know, may not know, and they just go in and just get sold something by a salesperson, or by, you know, they say, oh, I want to buy my partner a box set.
Yeah, like, my budget is X.
What are they playing?
Yeah,
like, I don't know. And they're like, do they look like these ones? And they're like, yes, those ones. And then they just get like, they play Blood Angels and they get the Space Wolves box.
Budget X, you know, faction Y, here you go.
Yeah. You know. Which, to be fair, is not hard to do at all. Like, different Space Marine starter boxes, that's the easiest thing in the world to mix up.
But you can't go wrong, though, with like a squad of Intercessors or something like that. I mean, for almost any Marine. No, that's not. Yeah, I said we're going to go talk about the Anties, whatever.
I think it's funny that you brought up, oh, just like buy basic troops, because like every Horde player, so that's like Tyranids, Orcs, Guard, they don't want basic troops. They probably have enough.
47,000. Yeah.
They really, really don't want to paint anymore.
So I'm a Guard player and I have over 200 painted Cadian infantry, various. You know, whatever, it's heavy weapons team, special weapons, whatever. If somebody gave me a box of 10 guardsmen, I'd think they hate me.
Same.
I'd be like, this person does not like me. They want me to feel pain.
They want your blood pressure up.
Yeah.
I bought you this box of orc boys. Oh, thank you.
Yeah. It's great.
Which again, all great gifts, but in the context of what the other person might actually want, unless they've telegraphed in some way, because every situation is different. This is more of a tongue-in-cheek segment if people haven't picked that up already, because I'm going to be terrible about, because this is, you know, it's all good. But I was thinking along the lines of brushes, even.
For me, I find hobby stuff is so much about personal preference. So I know a lot of people would really love to get a nice set of sable brushes, but if you gave that to me, I'd be like, thanks.
Gonna wreck them.
Well, either that or I'll probably be like, I'm probably going to re-gift these to somebody who's a better painter than I am.
Oh, don't skip on the brushes. I've been using the, like the Artificer brushes, and I like them.
I just think that it's so personal, right?
True.
That anything to do with hobby is so personal. If you ask one person, like, what's your favorite type of paint? It's going to be different for everybody, right? Mm-hmm. So I think, like, it's really difficult to buy hobby stuff for people unless they've specifically asked for it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I'd definitely steer away from brushes, because I feel like brushes is a very personal, like you guys said, very personal thing. And people use brushes all differently. Like, I know some people who like exclusively paint armies with makeup brushes, for instance, because they think they're like the best, like dry brushing or over brushing for those techniques.
Seeing what some of these actual artists can do with just tinted
with
brushes.
With a makeup. Exactly, yeah. Right. My soul is like, why can't I do that? And just like Tanya, if you bought them some expensive brushes, they might not want them or use them. So yeah. But as for like, I think one of the most universally loved, and this is, I know, isn't the right one, if somebody gave me two cans of Chaos Black spray, I'd be like, you're a champion. That's mother's milk. I'm never gonna not want. it's so often you go to do a project and you look at your shaky can and you're like, ooh, I hope this is enough. You know?
Yeah, that's fair. I've run out of gray primer. I've got one Space Marine that I want to paint up for just a brand new project, and I need to prime it gray. And I haven't primed gray in so long since some of the other projects I've been, because I've got Mephiston red for you know, the Blood Angels, and Death Guard green as a spray can for the Death Guard I've been working on. And so I don't know when the last time I needed a can of gray primer was, and I don't have it, and I'm missing it. I'm not saying that'd make, you know, a great gift either. But you are right. Hobbies personal is like, when do you, and especially with us, with us shifted through projects as often as we do, what's the right time? What's the right thing? Is it better to just avoid it altogether and like go out to dinner or something?
Yes.
A shared experience. It's going through this, it's very difficult. And maybe it's just us. Are we the problem? Like you, like us specifically on this show?
Yes.
Usually.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I would certainly appreciate any of the, even actually the anti stuff, I'd certainly appreciate if someone went out of their way to give that or thought that it'd be special. But it's, you're right, it's just that these things are just so situational that I think that it is better to just ask if you plan on doing that, or set up one thing that we did in the past with my gaming club was do a almost like a secret gift swap to where people, you know, made some, you know, some, I think they listed two or three different suggestions within a certain budget category and just left it up to interpretation of whoever drew their name. But they were all kind of, you know, safe choices because they'd given some indication.
Yeah. There's actually a really big sort of secret Santa that goes on in the hobby that's run by an actual Warhammer hero named Andrew Dart. So it's closed for this year. But if anybody is like, man, I wish that I had like a hobby friend that I could buy for, well, maybe signing up for the Secret Santa next year. It's a pretty cool initiative.
It's pretty neat.
Yeah, it's called Ho Ho Hobby Vices.
Oh, nice.
Yep. Yep.
Oh, the HHHV for short.
You know, I don't want to lean too heavily in the gift giving thing because everybody celebrates differently, and this is always presents interesting things. You know, certainly interesting times for folks.
You know what will be such an awesome gift is for somebody to invite me over for a game. And mm-hmm. the table's already set up. They've got dice ready to go and a tape measure. And all I got to do is bring my army, put it on the table, and go. That would be a great gift.
Oh, I know, man, dice would love to be my hobby friend.
Yeah, you've just got a perma table.
I have a perma table, and I usually set it up everything except like objectives because we roll the mission or whatever. But yeah, it's normally all set up and ready to go for whoever plays.
When me and my partner were living together, my former partner, we had a 3-bedroom house, and so we had one bedroom. We had our bedroom, one bedroom each, and I sat there for like, after we realized we got the house, we got like approval for it, I sat there like biting my finger being like, do I set up a perma table or a gym? I was like, this is actually a really hard choice.
Well, work out shed, moving so those models around.
The gym got relegated to the shed. my paint room and a perma table in that room.
Good man.
Is the right decision.
It was the right thing to do.
The dice, I think, are always a strong choice.
Yeah, actually, buying people dice is always a good thing, especially if you know what their faction is and you can order like some custom dice. That's always a good one.
You want to know something kind of nerdy and kind of sweet? So, you know, when you go to weddings and they always give you like wedding favors, right? And they're usually like, I don't know, cheap and things that you would like never use in your real life. Well, my husband and I, we decided to give everybody like custom dice that had a Cthulhu on them because obviously, and then like also our names and the date on them.
That
well.
Is awesome.
How did you fit that so much detail on one dice?
How?
Just every single side of the dice had a thing on it. There was no numbers at all.
No, just on the sixes.
So it had Cthulhu's face, two names and a date.
Yeah.
That's a good etch. That's good etching. Wow.
Shout out to ChessX. Yeah,
that's pretty nice.
And it was cheaper than those like cheap wedding favors that you buy.
Yeah, that's fair. That's cool.
Yeah, yeah. And they roll so good for me.
We can't argue with that.
That's right.
I'm glad that worked out. It'd be terrible. Like, well, these are the cool dice that I never get to use because they seem to favor the other ones, the other side.
Yeah.
Oh, so yeah. Sorry, I know there's been a little bit of a.
There's a bad thing to buy somebody. Joke supplies like rubber rulers and rigged dice because you don't want to be the reason somebody gets DQ'd.
My goodness. Yeah, the character builder dice or whatever I think they were marketed as for a while, the roll 18s, do not get those.
Yeah,
that is
it might seem funny at the time, but yikes.
Can we talk about those squig dice that came out that just bounced ones? Around everywhere?
They are for hilarity and narrative purposes only. If someone tried to play those against me, I'd be like,
no.
We're either both using them and having a funny time, which we're both going to get screwed over, or we're neither of us using them.
Yeah, that's fair.
Trick dice, a whole different category than like trick candles. Trick candles, you know, get you a funny internet video. Trick dice get you banned from the game store.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah.
So that's an excellent shout on those.
I have a gift, a no-go gift, and I think that it goes for like everything, like any sort of fandom. Don't get anybody anything that has sparkles on it.
What?
Or glitter.
Glitter.
Yeah, because it gets on everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Glitter. Wasn't there somebody who had like an army that had glitter on it? And then like every army that was at that event had glitter on it?
Dang.
You could really see like an Emperor's Children army like hanging out on a glitter world, you know?
I don't know if this will make it past the censors. Glitter. But glitter is like that. We used to call it the hobby herpes.
Oh.
It gets on everything.
Yeah.
You can't get rid of it.
Can't get rid of it. It's just there now.
So another good suggestion. Good. Another, we've hit a stride on these. That's good. Oh, well, we're going to, speaking of which, as we get close to the end of the year, we're going to try to get out shows every single week. So hopefully people keep coming back. If you haven't already, please consider subscribing. If you made it this far, I hope you've hit the subscription button or the thumbs up or something and leave a comment. We really appreciate that type of engagement. But yeah, we're going to keep on putting out shows every week as long as y'all are cool with that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Seems like it.
kind of a habit at this point.
Yeah, yeah. It is weird doing this on recording this day, and because so usually when this falls for me, it was at about midday on my Wednesdays. So like I had to, yeah, I used to move around my work, or you know, I got on a, had to renegotiate my contract to make sure I had time for FTN every week. And,
which we appreciate.
It's going to be refreshing now to just do it on a regular night.
Yeah, so you're not in the future anymore. I don't know if we can, you know, get to, like, how's the weather? You know, we're not going to know.
Yeah, my stocks are way down now that I'm just some, you know, just another guy in the States.
Yeah, we are.
You just replace me at any point now.
Experiencing this at the same time. You know,
I know. I list all my cred, all my future cred.
So if your stocks are down, does that mean my stocks are up?
Absolutely. Okay. That's actually legit. was just three 30-something-year-old blokes living in the States now, and Tanya from Canada. So you're the most unique of us by far.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, we're barely international at this point.
I know.
Well,
hold it down for you.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm never allowed to come live with you guys.
That's it. Gotta keep our credit. We're international. No, this is, I want to make you know, we will continue to put out shows going all the way into the new year and beyond, but not gonna do our best not to skip any episodes during this holiday. Let us know what you're working on. Hit me up on Twitter at @moremaster_tpm. I was gonna tell you about my odyssey with these Blightlord and Destroud Terminators and a couple of characters. I'm painting about 30 Terminators at once right now.
Jeez.
And I had to take, so I didn't say had to take, but I'm painting the Bolter casings on here. And actually, you know, I don't even always paint Bolter casings, but I think that with all the Death Guard green, that using corn red on the Bolter casings does kind of start to offset it and kind of pop out on the model. It looks pretty good. It looked really good on the Plague Marines, so I'm carrying that forward over on the Terminators. And there's just a point when I'm laying on, and I laid down all the metallics. So I laid down all the brass and all the lead belcher, and then the corn red on the Bolter casings, and everything is just gaudy and ugly and reflecting the light all wrong. And I'm just getting so upset with just the mass of green in front of me, and the bling of these unwashed metals, and the awkwardness of the seams in between where the metal meets the red. And I'm just like, what am I even doing in my life right now?
I see where this is going.
So I took a deep breath and just had confidence in the fact that once I get that wash on, it's all going to look magical.
I was about to say, like, have you washed them yet?
Have not.
If you have
not washed
them. You haven't, just dull those bad boys down. You dip, you wash, you...
Because I knew...
Sure. Which wash are you thinking?
Well, this is non-oil on this. So I knew that I'm going to... non-oil is going to go over the red, the silver, and the brass. And I knew that. And so I was just trying to, like, get to a point where I would do that all at the same time. Because when you're painting tons of models at once, I find that there is some benefit and having some awareness of your economy of motion. and how many times you have to touch a particular paint bottle and open it and close it and switch your paints and, you know, do your cleanup process or whatever. And so I wanted to get to that point to where all those base colors were laid down that were going to be null and void. And I almost hit the wall. I don't remember which Terminator it was. Might have been the 26th, might have been the 29th. You know, might have been the time when I realized as I was going in with the red that I'd missed one or two chain links that I needed for the silver. So I had to go back and fix that. And I'm sure I still didn't get them all. But because it's one of the things you're going through, you're going to miss things. You go back and fix it. But I was like, man, this is I'm hitting the wall here. I gotta push through. And then I had to realize that this is not the first time I've done this. This is the first time that I've painted 30 of these, but it's not the first time I've painted models and using this process. And I'm happy with the result in that. So I had to just kind of reaffirm that I was happy with the happy. I knew I'd be happier with the result. And so press on and make it happen.
I think it's a really good story. And when I was first getting started in the hobby, I painted Chaos Space Marines for a little bit. Didn't like the trim, so moved over to Space Wolves. And at that time, I felt like I was like very much a perfectionist, right? I wanted every little doodad and thingamajig painted, and I wanted like the most contrast and all of this. And I never got anything done. And then something switched when I moved over to my Imperial Guard. And I, you know what I think it was? I was going to a tournament, my very first one, and I had to get them up to tabletop. And normally I would never in a million years do this, but I just base coated and washed everything, like everything, no highlights or anything. I put it on the table and I was like, it looks really good when it's together. Right. And something clicked in my mind and like the perfectionism turned off. And like from that moment, it's been a joy to paint. It's never felt like a chore. And I think sometimes I know for me, I used to get stuck in like this loop of I have to keep doing all of the thingamajigs and doodads and I have to make sure every chain link is painted and all of this. And I think once you have that experience of seeing an entire painted army, even if it's not painted like perfect, you see the value in just painting it and getting it done.
Yeah.
It just makes it so much more enjoyable.
No, it sounds like the takeaway from both these stories is just get out of your own way. And
yeah,
I even tweeted about it. I was like, you know, take a deep breath. I didn't post any pictures because I was like, I'm not unleashing this on the world. I don't want to make anybody else feel this way. but trust the process, get it done. You'll always feel better once it is done. And now it looks pretty good. I got some touch-ups to do. I haven't done the touch-ups yet. Like there's going fast and with the volume of these, I'm not going too fast, but there's always things to touch up. You know, there's like 100 reasons that you could talk yourself out of even beginning the process or completing the process. But I think it's always worth it in the end to follow through and complete it. And then I'm going to be able to play with these Terminators forever once they're done.
And I can promise you, nobody is going to notice if you didn't paint that one link in that chain.
Yeah.
Yeah, but nobody's gonna scrutinize your stuff as hard as you do.
Yeah, that's very true.
A great point. And I'm at the point now also where with these Terminators that I know I've got a few more things to do on them. Like I haven't painted their capes or little tabards or any of that kind of stuff yet. And once I do that, they're going to look, you know, even more together. But I know, and this, I have to put this in the back of my head, and I'm sure this is not going to be the only time that I bring it forward to convince myself or whatever, is that until I get these bases done, they're still going to kind of look like a mass of green because I primed them green while they were on their bases. And so it looks all the same color, and it won't look like the same color as soon as I put the basic material in there. But I'm not going to do that till I get a little further ahead in the process.
Bases are such a cool way that you can get contrast in your model and make them look super interesting.
Yeah, really, well, I'm not promising super interesting. I'm just promising it won't look like a blob of green. So
fair enough.
It does. It helps bring everything into focus. You know, once the bases are on there. You've heard us talk about faces and bases in the past, but it really does. And I use Sterling Mud and Sterling Battlemire on the Death Guard bases. And then I've got like some decaying or some grass tufts with some brown in it. You know, they look like they're on the other side of going into fall or whatever grass that I think really helps offset everything. And then a nice black rim to the base. See, I'm visualizing. I'm like, this model is going to look amazing when I'm done with it. Mm. And staying focused on that.
Are you pumped?
I really am. I have a Death Guard army that I've played for, you know, played in the past, but I haven't had this kind of mass wall of Terminators. And I like the mass wall of Terminators. I think I will. They've played well on the table, so I want to get them done and have them in the the stockpile whenever we want to bring them out.
Just picture facing that army and going, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hope we don't roll a bunch of fours. You know. But I know it's going to look nice. And I think it's going to look good altogether. Like this, I like having complete armies, and it's just that you know, maybe I've challenged myself, or maybe a bit. You know, it was just that moment where I bitten off more than I can chew. Do I need to break this down into 5 or 10? I'm like, no. Let's just push forward a little bit and have faith in the process, faith in yourself and your ability, and then get it done. And it will get done. So to your point, let's just get out of our own ways and get our armies on the table.
That's right.
That's what I want to talk about this week. Adam, happy to have you over here.
Yeah, my pleasure to be here.
In the past. I don't know how time works. So
yeah, me either. It's wibbly wobbly timey wimey.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's 2021, so time has no meaning.
That's correct. We're still in the void.
Yeah. It's so weird. I look at dates like as part of my day job all the time, and I think, you know, we just did that. Like, no, it was 2019. You know, it was.
Yeah.
Feels like so. I'm sure other people are feeling out there. Anyway, time marches on with the show, and we will again continue to put out episodes. And so, if anybody wants to chat or let us know what they're working on or let us know what their plans are, that kind of stuff, they're excited about anything in the new year, hit us up. Let us know what's up. Love to hear about it.
Can't wait. New year's going to be very exciting. Bring on the return of chaos. Bring it. Bring it.
Well, thank y'all for listening. Thank y'all for being here on the show. We'll see y'all next week.
See you.
Bye.
Bye bye.
Prospect scan is clear. I think they're gone. For now.